If you enjoy listening to adventure stories, then you should visit thedihedral.com. You will find stories from other members of the community and read about climbing, life, and the outdoors. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Let's connect and climb on!
Climb on!
Welcome to another episode of the Dihedral Podcast. This is Gaia, once again.
I'm Carrot.
And today we have the opportunity to be speaking to Brandon Bargo, half of the High Pointers. Greg was pointers. Not able to join us today, but Brandon is here representing. And these two brothers have a show at PBS. Right now, some more episodes are coming. He's going to talk a little bit more about that. And we also want to talk about their upbringing and just their overall adventurous spirit. So thank you so much, Brandon, for joining us today.
Yeah, I'm excited to be with you guys.
Thank you. And before we start and dig deep into the details and the dynamics of the show, could you please explain what High Pointers is, and both the term and the show?
Sure. So high pointing is climbing the highest natural point in whatever state or country you're in. And it's a really interesting kind of niche climbing group. And I found myself kind of getting into high pointing because, I love climbing, any kind of climbing. That can be rock climbing, ice climbing, mountaineering. I like it all. And so over the years, you know, I've been traveling and climbing probably 20 years or so. And so I've been to 53 countries. And every time I'm traveling, I'm like, you know what? I wonder what the highest peak is here. And so I would try to look into it, and then I go climb it. And then I started realizing, you know, I just like, I don't care what kind of mountain it is, I just like being up in the mountains. And so I slowly started, you know, getting into, you know, high pointing, and realized there's a lot of people out there doing it. And just to give you a little background on my, you know, kind of where I came from. So I got my degree in journalism at Texas State University in broadcasting. And so I had that background, and I love documenting my trips. And so my brother and I back in 2006, we went and climbed Denali, so the high point of Alaska and North America. But we wanted to make it this big epic trip. So we shipped our bicycles up to Talkeetna, the kind of the starting point of Denali. So we climbed Denali, just my brother and I, it was just the two of us. And I mean, it was pretty epic, minus 40 degrees. We ended up having to dig a snow cave and hug each other to survive, and just crazy stuff. And so we made the summit, made it to the top, 4th of July. And then we came down, put our bikes together. We had these bob trailers, loaded our tents and everything up, and we biked from Alaska to Baja, Mexico. So it was 4,000 miles, 6,600 kilometers, and just self-supported. And biked all the way, and we just pull over, camp, eat our food and stuff. And then we ended up going to Baja and then scuba diving with great white sharks. Because I wanted to do two extreme things. I wanted to, we call it the Summit to Sea Expedition. So climb the highest point and then go scuba dive with great whites. And so it was about, I think it took us about 4 months, and we filmed it. We made a documentary. And so after that, I was like, Greg, we need to start a company. We need to figure out how we can continue to make our adventures, you know, lifelong and make some money doing it. And so, you know, over the years, we started working on different TV shows, on PBS travel shows. One of them is a local one in Texas called The Day Tripper. Started working on that when that show was just getting off the ground. And we started creating documentaries and really just putting the two things together. And, you know, along the way, we kind of built up our climbing resume and, you know, went and got trained in AMGA, went to Knowles, National Outdoor Leadership School, did a mountaineering course in the Cascades, North Cascades, and just started building our resume so that we could film and also be doing adventures in climbing. And so that kind of takes us to where we are now with our TV show, which is called The High Pointers. And so the premise of the show is my brother and I, I'm kind of the big picture guy. My brother's the detailed guy. He kind of reins me in. I get excited. I'm like, let's go do stuff. And And so the premise of the show is we climb the highest point in all 50 U.S. states. My original idea was go climb the highest point in every country, but that's expensive to film. And so I was like, let's start with the 50 U.S. states. We'd already climbed Denali. And so that's the premise of the show. We go climb the highest point in every state, but we make it a bit about the journey. So our Texas episode, because we're from Austin, so like, let's start in our backyard of Texas. So the Texas episode, we start in Houston and do a behind the scenes tour of Johnson Space Center at NASA. We go to Johnson Space Center, and then we go to Houston or San Antonio and do a Mexican restaurant, have a jalapeno eating contest. My brother and I are really competitive, and so we had a jalapeno eating contest. And then we go from there to McDonald Observatory, do a behind the scenes tour there, and then we finish with the high point of Texas, Guadalupe Peak. And every episode we have a guest. And so our guest for Texas was he's an astronaut, astronaut Hall of Fame. He's the only person in the world to have climbed Everest and gone to space. And so we've done Texas, and it's we call that our pilot episode. And we just finished season one. We've shot 5 episodes and should be airing within, let's see, where are we at? Almost the end of March. So we got about a month or so before we start filming or start airing other episodes.
Oh man, that's so exciting. You have this dream and this idea to try to make this dream come true, and it's living right before you. You guys got to be so pumped about this.
You know, yeah, we are. And I tell you what, it's like these kinds of things, I think they take time. And so it's like, it's been probably a 3.5 year process of from shooting the first episode and working it out and then finishing up the whole season. I mean, it's a process. And so I think climbing mountains teaches perseverance, and rock climbing teaches perseverance. And I think that pays off when you're trying to make a TV show, because there's just so many things that there's always something that you're having to overcome, just like if you were climbing, right? And so if it's hard, then it's worth it. that's my mentality.
I like it. It's clear in the pilot episode that you and your brother care deeply for you. I mean, you guys are clearly really, really good friends, but you mentioned a little bit about the sibling rivalry. I thought it was kind of entertaining in the show that we're talking about, the one that you guys filmed in Texas. I think, were you in San Antonio when you had this jalapeno pepper eating competition? And the plate of jalapenos that the owner brought out, there was like 400 jalapenos, and both of you were just like, I think your brother may have beaten you by just maybe half of a jalapeno or something like that. But I wanted to talk a little bit about that sibling rivalry. Has that been something constant throughout your lives? Are you always trying to one-up each other, or is that something that developed as the show went on?
Well, so, you know, I'm the older brother, so there's a gap. And I mean, it's because I'm the older brother, like, there's actually a 7-year gap. We probably act a lot closer in age than we are, and a lot of people think we're twins, but there's a 7-year gap. So there's enough of a gap that he's young enough that usually I'm always having to catch up, because he's pushing. And so, I mean, to answer your question, the short answer is yes, we're extremely competitive, and we're both lifelong athletes. We just grew up playing sports. And so in high school, we both played football. We ran track. I always kind of started, you know, the trend, and then he would go and do it. And so then in college, we both played rugby. And then after college, I've always been the one that goes to my brother and is like, hey, why don't we go try this thing out? So, you know, we did all the high school sports. Then we played rugby in college. And then after college, I asked my brother. So I just graduated college, and he was about to go into college. So I was like, hey, I'm going to move to Utah, and I want to see if I can make the Olympic team in skeleton. So skeleton is where you head first down an ice track going 80 miles an hour, pulling 5 G's through corners. I mean, it's just crazy. And so I was like, hey, I'm going to go try out for the team. Want to try to make the U.S. team. So he's like, sure. So he quit, didn't go to college. He ended up going back later and graduating, but he skipped while we were training. So we moved to Utah, and we're training for skeleton. And so we've just always kind of, you know, one, just always been competitive, been in sports, and just putting each other. But I think it's always in a good way. Like currently my brother, he's constantly doing ultra marathons. He's probably in 2,500 mile races. And so I'll go pace him. So I'll go run 40 or 50 miles with him just to keep him going. And like, so like the roles were reversed where it's like now a lot of times I'm helping him out, you know, on some of his races. So I think it's a healthy competitive. Like we do it, I think we do it in a kind of a loving, in a loving way. And that just goes from having done lots and lots of hard things together and climb lots of mountains. And without exaggerating, like we've had several very close life and death moments, like that one, like I said, in Denali, where, you know, we ended up getting stuck in the snow cave and we had to hold each other in the snow cave, for 24 hours to prevent ourselves from, freezing to death. And so you have these kind of moments where it's like, you know, a lot of times we don't have to pretend, you know, if we're doing the TV show, we're not pretending. I mean, it's just, it comes from real moments, climbing mountains where we've had to protect each other.
And experiences like that unite you a lot. You mentioned that Greg, your brother, does ultra marathons, and I used to do those too. And they are draining. There's a mental component there that's very present. Well, not only in ultra marathons, but in climbing and all of these outdoor extreme activities. And what you mentioned, it's very true how much it brings you to closer to the person that you're doing it with. Because I used to run with my mom and we would see each other in circumstances where we would, 1 hour we would be fighting, then the other one we would be crying, then the other one we would be hugging each other. You go through so many ups and downs together that after that, I remember whenever we finished a race or something, I would look back and say, my goodness, we're invincible. Like, we're invincible, is that how you say it? Because when you look back, you say, I did that. It's unreal. Yeah. And you can also see that, yes, in the Texas episode when you were done Guadalupe Peak towards the end, which you probably is not as draining as any other thing that you've done before, but you could see the joy. And also because you were sharing it with someone else. And I could tell you guys were a little bit intimidated by him. I was like, oh my God. I see myself in them.
Yeah, it's yeah, an astronaut, a doctor. I mean, you know, he's probably one of the most accomplished people ever, right?
No doubt.
Yeah.
So safety is paramount in climbing and mountaineering. And in the show, it seems like that fell a little bit more on your brother. I imagine you guys have the same abilities and things like that. But can you talk a little bit about your background in training and maybe some mentors that you've had along the way?
Yeah, you know, I mentioned earlier taking the Knowles course. I would say that for me was a huge, huge deal. So when I graduated college, I basically spent 4 years just traveling around the world and climbing mountains and kind of going on adventures. But I always found myself doing stupid things. I'd go hitchhike, and I'm like, I'm going to go climb this mountain. And then I'm like, you know what? I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm going to get myself killed. So I decided to go and take this Knowles course. And I, you know, heard about Knowles from some friend of mine. He's like, you should really go take a Knowles course. And so Knowles stands for National Outdoor Leadership School. And it was amazing. They teach you hard technical skills, but they also teach you leadership skills in an outdoor environment, teach you expeditionary behavior. So it's like all these important things that you need to know to be safe in the mountains. And so I was there for a month in the North Cascades climbing Mount Baker. And that really started the curve for me where it's like, okay, I can start doing this safely. Then, like I said, when we moved to Utah, my brother and I, in the off season, when we weren't doing skeleton, we joined a mountaineering club. And so we started learning those skills through a club. And so we started leading trips with this mountaineering club and climbed Mount Rainier, which is the high point of Washington, climbed Mount Whitney in the winter, which is the high point of California. You know, again, kind of doing these high points and kind of learning about them, but just putting the skills together and then started getting certifications, you know, getting certifications to set up top rope, rock climbing and single pitch instructor training, and just slowly starting to gather the necessary knowledge to be outdoors in the mountains safely. And to the point where you get comfortable enough that you can actually start leading your friends, and then at some point start leading groups. And that's kind of where we got, where we started actually guiding and have been leading groups now for, you know, at least 10 years, 15 years. I mean, we've done, both my brother and I, we've led a bunch of trips up Kilimanjaro, guided trips up Aconcagua, which is the high point of South America. You know, just all over, just leading groups in the mountains. And now we like, you know, we like pushing ourselves, but we like to find that point for other people. Like, you know, we really get a lot of pleasure and enjoyment in helping people push themselves, because we find like there's a lot of, you know, ability to learn about yourself when you're pushing yourself. And so we like doing, you know, helping others kind of find that discomfort. and so we love it as much as, you know, pushing ourselves as we do for helping others do the same thing.
I gotta ask, when you've climbed Whitney and Rainier and Kilimanjaro and all these amazing places, what do you guys have to do to pump yourself up to hit the high point in, I don't know, some of the flattest states in the country? I mean, how can you get pumped up for 200 feet when you've gone up 14,000 feet?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny because there's definitely been like a shift mentally to get there. I think in the beginning, especially when I was younger, like, you know, 20, 21, 22, it was just all about just the extreme, you know, doing the hardest stuff, being hardcore or whatever. And I think a lot of times, sometimes you're trying to prove something to people, or you got to, you know, prove something to yourself. But once you've done, you know, enough hard things, there's this shift. And for me, a lot of it is just, it really is about the journey, and it's about the people that you're doing stuff with. So for us, it really is a huge thing to be able to do adventures with your family. But that is also just incorporating your friends and other people into the journey. And so that's why we did put a lot of thought into how we wanted to create this TV show, because we're like, what are the things that we really like? And so, I mean, a lot of it has to do with your attitude. I mean, you know, if you go climb the high point of Louisiana, it's 535 feet, and it took us 15 minutes, you know, hiking to the top. But you know, it's like we start off in New Orleans and we go do some, you know, go to some blues music, and it's just really like building up the anticipation before we get to that high point. And so I think that's part of it, is just really starting to learn to like just be in the moment, enjoying the journey. And then it's like, you know, not everything has to be this crazy, huge, epic thing. Sometimes it's just enjoying the people you're with and the things that you're doing with them.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned that it took us 15 minutes. Okay. Let's say that we go leisurely to do it, but we're talking about production for a TV show where any minute it's money, it's golden. So I don't know. And you're going to fill us in about this later, what states are coming next, etc. But I'm pretty sure that it took you 4 hours or so for Guadalupe Peak. I think you mentioned a couple of hours at least, right? So that gave you some some content for the show. But outside from the blues, et cetera, what other challenge was like, okay, how are we going to fill in X amount of minutes for this episode when we only hiked for 15 minutes in Louisiana?
Well, that's a lot of where the guests come in. Because if you have interesting guests, you can have interesting conversations. Because when we started trying to develop the show, we're like, how in the world are we going to make Kansas interesting? You know?
So, no offense to people in Kansas.
Yeah, sorry if you're from Kansas. But I think they know their mountains aren't the greatest. But yeah, we were like, how are we going to figure that out? And so we're like, you know, yeah, we like bringing people into our adventures. So yeah, we really thought out like, yeah, having guests, and they're guests from the state that we're visiting. So they're going to have some knowledge and maybe some, you know, something that they can share about their state that we're going to, maybe, you know, for the first time. So I think that's one thing, but then maybe we spend more time like in the case of, you know, Louisiana, because we just, that was our, that was the one of the states that we just visited and filmed, is we spent more time, you know, in New Orleans. We spent more time eating good food, which Louisiana is known for, you know. And so every show, you know, we have certain segments that we always incorporate, and one is always food, because everybody loves food, or at least we do. And so we'll spend more time, you know, doing those things, because we know, you know, we don't need 8 hours to hike the mountain. We only need, you know, 15 minutes. So in Louisiana, our guest was the CEO of Tabasco, which was super cool.
That's good.
Do you do a Tabasco challenge with Greg or no?
We did do it. I can't tell you what it is.
We'll have to wait.
So just following up on that question, obviously you and your brother are just animals, and your guest, at least on the first one, is just literally out of this world. But you guys have a production team going up those mountains with you. Who are those people, the people behind the camera, the people on the mics, who are with you and also carrying these heavy pieces of equipment?
Yeah, it's funny. We've been kind of having to sift through our crew, because, you know, we'll do an episode where we're like, I don't think that guy's he's fit enough. We better find another one. But we've had some of our crew, like some of our camera guys, they're professional adventure racers who have and ultra marathoners that are just really fit, tough guys who've climbed a lot of mountains. But we did one of our episodes this year was Colorado, which if you climb it in the summer, it's not a big deal. It's Mount Elbert. But we did it in the winter. We did it in February. We thought it would be cool to try it in February. And we're like, hopefully we'll get a nice sunny day. No. It ended up being like 40 below and like 60, 70 mile an hour winds. I mean, it was crazy. And so we ended up having to send our sound guy back down, because I was like, this guy's going to lose his fingers. And I was like, it doesn't really matter. We're not going to get any sound. It's too windy anyway. Just go ahead and go down. So sometimes, you know, that's where us, my brother and I, you know, having done a lot of guiding leading up to this type of trip, you know, we kind of have to go into guiding mode and like make sure our crew is going to be safe first, you know. And we try to get really tough guests for that reason. So our guest for that episode is one of the toughest ultra marathoners of all time. His name's Marshall Ulrich, and he ran across the U.S. and done crazy, crazy stuff. And so for him, it was like, we didn't have to worry about our guests. We were worrying more about some of the crew, you know.
And I guess that's where your production and filming experience kicks in. Do you have to take over, or have you had to take over it any circumstance to be like, okay, no, you go down and then I'll take over filming this particular section, or not?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, sometimes we'll say, hey, we'll just do some GoPro shots here if we need to. Both my role and my brother's role, I mean, we do, you know, we'll do directing, we'll do some of the writing, producing. I mean, so we kind of take on a lot of different roles, which I like, but it's a lot of work to have to do a lot of different things. While you're also trying to host the show, you're having to say, cut, let's do this. But we try to keep it streamlined too, because, you know, it's like, you're not just looking for Hollywood crew people. You need climbers. And so I remember the very first episode we did, we had our director and camera guy flew in from Los Angeles, and we started doing the hike, and it's only Guadalupe Peak. You know, you're like, oh, it's only 8,000 feet, but it's a pretty challenging hike if you don't do a lot of hiking. And the director's like, hey, we're actually going to go hike this thing. I was like, what are you talking about? Of course we are. What, are we going to go get a helicopter and shoot this thing? Like, so he's like, man, I've done a lot of shoots where all this stuff's fake. I'm like, well, not us.
That's awesome. That's so good.
And what ended up happening? They hiked it?
Yeah, they hiked it. But my brother and I, sometimes we'll take some of the equipment and just throw it in our backpacks and carry it for these guys. You know, that's why we go through a lot of crew trying to find the right fit.
Now, I really appreciated the segment of the first episode when you guys went through your packs and talked a little bit about like the amount of water you're going to bring and why, the amount of food and snacks and things that are really important, because I think you guys are going to well, you definitely will motivate a lot of people to start to do some of those things. And I think you've taken a lot of responsibility and live up to that responsibility in making really good recommendations and putting safety first. So that was fun for me to see what you guys are carrying. I'm sure it's fun for everybody to see as well. But go ahead.
That's good feedback.
Yeah.
That's good feedback. I'm glad that, because one of the things that we want to be able to do for the show is we want it to be entertaining, but we also want it to be educational. And so I think that's the kind of the balance that we're always trying to find.
Yeah. Plus it gives us a little bit of like a voyeur's point of view of what these like amazing climbers have in their bags, like an inside peek and something that generally you don't get to see as you're walking by somebody. I wanted to back up a little bit to a young version of Brandon, maybe 8 years old. What I picture is you just like jumping off of your garage and doing all this crazy stuff. And so I'm wondering where this adventurous spirit came from and when you noticed that it was part of who you were.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like lately I've been talking a lot about that. To answer your question, the short answer is yes, I was that kid. I had lots of energy, and that's why I love working with kids and taking kids outside, because I was one of those kids where I had a hard time in school. I had a hard time focusing, and I just wanted to be outside, and I just wanted to be doing things. And I mean, all the way through school. And I remember even in high school, I'm like, man, I just want to get out of here and go do stuff. You know, I'm tired of just hearing stuff. I want to go do stuff. And so, I remember even like you were saying, 8 years old. I mean, I remember even back when I was 5 years old, my dad would go out for runs around the neighborhood and go run 3 or 4 miles. And he's like, Brandon, you can't go with me, you know, I'm going to go run. And I would sneak behind him and he wouldn't know. And I would be just far enough where I just always follow him.
That's amazing.
So and would go run. Oh.
Yeah, exactly. That's spectacular.
So I would just go follow behind him, you know? I just always wanted to be doing stuff, all the time. And so, you know, fast forward that to even just the, like within the last 5 or 6 years ago, I do a lot of, you know, leadership trainings, but sometimes I'll actually do the training, but sometimes I'll go through trainings just so I can keep myself motivated, inspired. And so I went to this leadership training, and there was a neuroscientist who was part of our group, and the whole time she was observing me, and she said, you know, I was noticing some things that you were doing, and I want you to come into my office and I want you to test it.
All right.
And so without going into too much detail, I mean, she basically was like, you know, you have a lot of cortisol in your body. And she was able to test me and study. And so she's like, you know, based on the test and the things that I've tested on you and studied you, she's like, you know, a lot of people that are like you would be in jail or on drugs. And so you've been able to learn how to safely compensate for your weaknesses and just work through some of these things naturally, whereas others couldn't. And so she's like, so that's great that you were able to figure that out. And I told her, and so one, it was interesting that she was able to see this in me and then provide this insight that I had never known. But two, it was like, there's just a lot of stuff, you know, internally that it's like, I just always felt like it was in me, driving me, pushing me that, you know, if I was doing skeleton or playing rugby, it was like, I knew that when my collegiate career and my athletic career kind of phased out, I needed to find something that allowed me to use that energy in a safe and healthy way. And I just knew like climbing mountains was going to be the best for me, you know, and I couldn't be in an office. And so it was nice to confirm that through her saying like, no, you're absolutely right. You've made a lot of your life choices based on physiologically what happens to you.
That's very interesting. It's kind of cool to have somebody be able to point that out to you, something that you probably knew that you were a little bit different than people who were just trying to dart through school and end up in a box for the next 40 years until they retire, and then they can go on a boat or something like that. That doesn't seem like it's ever even crossed your mind. So to have somebody.
Yeah, and I think that's why too, I recognize it in a lot of kids. You know, it's like we just label kids as a bad kid. You're like, no, that kid has a lot of energy. He just needs to figure out where to place it.
Yeah, it really is. So you guys are currently in Austin, or you're from Austin, or both?
Both.
Okay. So I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about some of your favorite climbing destinations or outdoor destinations in and around Austin.
Well, since I'm from here, unlike most people, some of my favorite places have slowly started to get busier and busier. I think the go-to place that most people always love climbing at is Reimer's Ranch, you know, and it's nice that it's developed more, and now there's some new areas to climb in Reimer's. That's, you know, for the last 20, 25 years, I've been climbing there and just have always loved it. Especially in the summer, I think it's one of the best in the country, if not the world, is Pace Bend to go deep water soloing. And so that's probably my go-to favorite place. I love going to Pace Bend, taking a kayak out there or a noodle and just climbing all day and just deep water soloing. I mean, that's probably my favorite. And then of course, you know, it's nice because only an hour and a half away, you got Enchanted Rock, and you can get some granite and you can do some trad climbing. And then, you know, we're only 3 hours away to go down to Potrero and go to Potrero Chico, and you've got multi-pitch climbing in Mexico. So it's kind of a nice hub. And then, you know, occasionally I'll go up to Mineral Wells just to get some change up over by west of Fort Worth. But I mean, there's enough climbing, you know, here. And then you got Monster Rock, which is a private ranch, but it's open to the public, and that's a pretty cool spot too. So yeah, lots of good climbing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. A lot of people don't think of, you know, Austin as necessarily a climber's destination, but there's a lot of good stuff out there.
Well, I think people dismiss it because, you know, you compare it to Colorado or whatever, the West, and you've got huge multi-pitch climbs, and here they're 50-foot climbs, but you know, you've got everything. They're just shorter pitches.
Yeah, but also you learn to appreciate it when you live in probably a state that doesn't offer the majestic, ginormous things, but then you also learn to appreciate it, and it becomes the cultural thing, the community and that component, etc. And talking about community and you climbing in Austin growing up, recently we lost a flake. It was gone. Have you been back since that happened?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I was just out at Reimer's a few weeks ago, and I walked down, and I had heard that it happened, but then when I saw it in person and realized how big a piece of rock broke off, one, it was amazing to see. And then two, it was so sad because that was such a fun climb. And I used to love going out there, and they had the speed comp that you could do. And, I think one, it just lets you know too, that, you know, a lot of people think that rock is permanent and it's always going to be there. And it's not, you know, I mean, it's fragile, and especially limestone. You get enough rain, that stuff it can go at any moment. So you kind of have to take advantage while you can.
Yeah, we went there as well, and we saw it, and you can't help not to get morbid. And we were thinking, we're glad that this happened at night, because imagine if someone were climbing that
would be over.
That would be the end of it. And that also reminds
I thought the exact same thing.
Yeah, and that also reminds you of like the fragility of just life and these sort of activities. Mm-hmm. You're exposed in any moment, anything could happen. And okay, well, now that we're talking about these things, is there any particular anecdote other than the Denali one that you have that you were like, oh my gosh, this was it. I closed my eyes. If I opened it, I was gone. And how you overcame it. And he
left. So
where do I start?
Yes.
My brother and I, we went and climbed Kilimanjaro. So we've done it multiple times to lead groups. And we did one expedition where we climbed the three highest mountains in Africa. So Kilimanjaro, Mount Kenya, and Mount Stanley. So when we, and we biked to all three, and then we canoed across Lake Victoria, which was a, that was a pretty awesome trip. But when we were climbing Mount Kenya is a technical peak. It's 17,000 feet and it's, you know, whatever, 17 pitches. And we had never climbed it. We did the north face, which is a little bit harder than the south side. The north side, it's like up to 5'9", multi-pitch trad. But we'd never climbed it. We had a little bit of beta, not a ton. So we were climbing it slow because we were trying to route find. And so we got up to the final, like the 16th pitch. We're up at the top. And we only had 150 feet to go. And it was kind of a traverse across. And so it was real slow. And it started, it's snowing and it wouldn't stop. And so we thought we were going to climb up and then we'd get down to pit seven, bivvy, and then finish the climb. And so we left our sleeping bag and our extra layers and water at pit seven. And so when we got to pit 16, it's snowing and we're just wearing climbing shoes, no socks or anything. And it's like, you know, maybe 10 or 12 degrees. It was cold. So I started getting hypothermic again, because while he's climbing, I was, you know, belaying him. So I finally get up to him. And at this point, I've never been this cold in my life. And we had climbed Denali in 40 below and had to stay in that snow cave and hug each other. I was colder than that moment. And so I realized, you know, talking about the fragility and just that fine edge, like, oh, I could just feel it. I'm like, I am, you know, I'm on the edge of not recovering. I mean, I was shaking uncontrollably so bad that I could tell, like, I'm gonna die. And so again, my brother and I were sitting there hugging, and I was like, we both decided we're 150 feet from the summit, but there's no way if I'm sitting there having to belay him or he's having to belay me, that we're going to be able to make the summit and come back all the way down. So we decided 150 feet from the summit, we're done. And so we just sat there. We tried rappelling a couple of pitches and I just could not stop shivering. I'm like, I'm going to die. So we just sat there and hugged each other for 8 hours and stomped our feet until the sun came up. And I just remember like looking in this tiny little African village with lights. And I'm like, oh, if we could just get there, there's life there, you know? And it's like, that's not happening. And I just remember thinking like, if we go to sleep right now, we're going to die. So we just sat there and hugged each other for 8 hours until the sun came up, that it was warm enough that we could kind of get some kind of warmth that we could rappel all the way down. And so, I mean, we made it, but it was brutal. And then that wasn't the end of the trip, because then we still had to recover and go canoe across Lake Victoria and all that other stuff. But I just remember thinking like that was one of those moments where it was just such a fine line. If we weren't careful, we were going to die. You know, cause you read books about survival and you hear this stuff and whatever. But then you're in the moment and you can't feel sorry for yourself. You're like, I just got to live. And then I start thinking like, I don't want to allow my little brother to die, because it's like, I'm the one inviting him to do these trips. So then it's like, you know, there's a lot of motivation to stay alive, because you're like, I got to keep him alive. He's got to keep me alive. And I don't want to be the idiot that killed my brother. You know, so yeah. So I would say that's pretty memorable.
That is an amazing story. Unreal. Yeah, memorable to say the least. What do your family and friends say when you tell them stories like this? Are they like, hey, maybe sit the next one out, or are they supportive?
I think we've been doing it now for so long, they get it, you know. Originally, I think people were just like, maybe you shouldn't be doing that stuff. Even my parents now, I've been doing it so long, they're just like, they come to expect it, you know. Also, I realized, like, I'm one of those guys, I used to tell stories, but it's like, somebody tells a story, I'm like, oh yeah, I got a story for you. And then they're like, you know, I don't want to hear your stories. You make us sound bad. So I'm like, I really don't share stories, because it's like, I don't know. I can kind of understand like these military guys that come back, especially like these older guys, they come back and they just don't share any stories, right? Because it's like, how do you, you know, go back into that moment or compare those things. And so, I don't know, like, I have to be, sometimes I have to be, you know, in the mood to like, to go back there and like share those things. Cause I mean, they when they're happening, they're serious.
Yeah. And well, based on what you've told us and well, the research that we did on you as well, you have quite the experience engaging in extreme outdoor adventures for sure. And well, right now at this moment in time, you're focusing on highlighting the high pointers with your brother in the TV show format. And you mentioned this at the beginning, it's an arduous process. It's long. People don't understand how time consuming it is from pre to production and to post production. So how has that process been like for you with the high pointers?
Just going through the process of creating the show and the episodes.
Yeah.
You know, I've realized how much I really enjoy the process. And I think it, you know, comparing it to going on an expedition or climbing, you know, when you're going on a major expedition, it's not just climbing the mountain, you know, you're having to save the money, you know, to go for 3 weeks or a month or 2 months. You're having to put all the equipment together. You're having to put the team together. You know, it's so similar to putting a show together. You know, it's like, yeah, I have to go get the crew. But then once you do all the pre-production, then you got to go out and shoot the TV show. But then it doesn't end there. Then you have to go and do all the post-production. You have to edit. And then through editing, you have to figure out what are the graphics that we want to use, or what's the music that we decide that we want to choose to create the mood. And so there's just this whole process. And then once you've done all the post-production, then you have to go get all the approvals through the network, through PBS. And so it's just, there's a lot to it and there's pieces, but I think if you take it in chunks and you take it in bites, just like you do when you're going, you know, on a climb or an expedition, it makes it manageable and not overwhelming, not stressful. And then you kind of have to lean into it. Like, just like, you know, if I went to go climb a mountain because it's easy, then it's like, what's the point? You know, I go climb because it's hard. And so if I'm going to do a TV show and I expect it to be easy, well, it's like, well, then everybody would be doing a TV show. Right. And so I, you know, I've worked with National Geographic and Discovery Channel and those guys. And I ended up going to PBS because I was like, you know what? I want to make a TV show that I want to see. Anytime I worked with those guys, I would create an idea or create a concept or a show. And they're like, we don't want to do what you just said. We'll take your idea and we'll make it whatever we want. And I was like, if I go to PBS, I can own the content and they allow me to do what I want. And so I wanted to create a show, like I had mentioned, that I wanted it to be entertaining, but also educational. Because I mean, a lot of these shows that you see on TV, they're entertaining, but they really, I mean, you know, all these survival shows that you see on TV, I mean, they're not really that accurate. And so like, yeah, we wanted to create a show where it's like, you know, like you mentioned, you go through the gear, we do all that kind of stuff. And it's like, it's a show that I can feel good about. Like, yeah, you know, it's good entertainment. It's family entertainment. Like I can let my, you know, nieces and nephews see it. But it's also going to educate the climbing community, you know, how to do things properly. And it's not just creating this, you know, false drama. You know,
you really did strike a chord. It can appeal to a lot of different people. Clearly climbers are going to love it. And they should definitely check it out, but even foodies are going to love it. Even people who just want to be educated. I mean, having all these really interesting people on the show and seeing what they can do, most people probably wouldn't expect an astronaut to also have been a doctor and also be a mountain climber and all these different types of things. And so only one episode is out so far. Is that right? Only the pilot episode. It was great.
That's correct.
And if the next few episodes are anything like that, I just can't wait for them to start.
So season one will consist of how many episodes? And can you just explain that a little bit? How many episodes? What are the states that are coming up? And what should the audience be looking forward to?
Yeah, so it's a 30-minute format. So, you know, PBS, we don't have any commercials during the show. It's just commercials before and commercials after. So it's 24 minutes of just, you know, pure show in the middle. And we're going to do, for season one, we have 5 episodes. So we'll see how PBS, you know, PBS, the way it works is you have networks all over the country, and so they may air it at different times. And, you know, as we get more information, we'll be putting it on our website for people to see, and we'll be posting on social media and stuff. But yeah, it'll air nationwide on PBS. In the five episodes, so we have Texas. So we'll re-air the Texas episode. And then our second episode will be Virginia. Mount Rogers is the high point. Third episode will be New Hampshire. It's a great mountain, Mount Washington, the windiest mountain in the world, or highest recorded winds. The fourth is Louisiana, Driscoll Mountain, which is a massive 535 feet. And then the fifth one is Colorado, which is the third highest. You got Denali, Mount Whitney, and then Mount Elbert. So those will be the five episodes. Like I said, it'll vary from market to market, but hopefully it should be airing. We're hoping that by, you know, around May. So, you know, right almost summertime, we'll start seeing all these other episodes getting released. If people want to see the Texas episode, which you've mentioned, that one is out. That one is available for people to see. And you could even Google the High Pointers. It should show up, either the High Pointers or the High Pointers with the Bargo Brothers. It'll pop up on the PBS app for people to watch.
Before we wrap up, I want to ask you certain questions, and you just have to answer without thinking much. Don't say the name of the place or anything, so people know what to look for. Just the state. So they're like, okay, this is the episode. This is the episode. Okay. Favorite restaurant.
You want me to tell you the name of the restaurant?
Just say the state, so they're like, okay, Virginia episode. Okay. I know I have to look forward to this thing or whatever. So favorite restaurant out of all the states?
It is Virginia.
Oh, really?
Okay, let's go Virginia.
Oh, no, I'm not going to say favorite guest because that's going to put it out there.
What about most intense guest?
Most intense, man. Oof, they are all intense, but probably Colorado.
Favorite episode so far that you're like, man, this was the experience.
Probably Colorado.
Okay, so Colorado and then Virginia. I love food, so I'm looking forward to the Virginia episode for sure.
Yeah, and just to give you a little, teaser on the guest. So we had the astronaut, and he's not just any astronaut, in the Astronaut Hall of Fame, climbed Everest, gone to space, doctor. We have a Navy SEAL, SEAL Team 6 member and instructor who's written 20 books on Navy SEAL stuff. That guy's pretty awesome. Then we had an ultra marathoner who has won Badwater Ultra Marathon 4 times, which is considered the hardest foot race on the planet. And he's run across the U.S. in 60 days, average 52 miles a day. Then we have high altitude cameraman who's climbed Everest 4 times, and a good friend of mine, super cool guy. And then we had the CEO of Tabasco. So those are the guests.
That's a great lineup. What about, I'll ask one more, state in which you and your brother got into the biggest argument?
That's probably all of them.
That's great.
I mean, off camera.
Yeah, of course.
We're cordial in front of the camera. I'm aggressive. He's passive aggressive. So, yeah. I can say this about that though. And everybody always makes fun. I just get hangry. When I'm hungry, I'm just like, I'm done. Let's go.
Beast comes out.
So yeah. Now we know that the food component in the show is because of you. It's necessary. It's for Brandon.
Exactly.
That's right.
I don't know. That's right. There's anything else that you would like to add? Plug anything in other than the show, or any advice?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say especially because of the way that PBS works, and you know, people are like, oh, when's the show gonna air? I would definitely say, you know, we're going to be posting on our Instagram and on our Facebook page and our website. And so it's easy to find us because it's the High Pointers. So If you just do high pointers, it might pull up the club or the foundation. So you got to put the high pointers, and then that way we'll be posting, you know, all the information as we start airing the show.
Yeah, it's a great show. You guys have to definitely check it out. Brandon, thanks so much. Thanks for joining us today. This was a blast. We'll have to hook up with you sometime in Austin. Go get some food and hit some rocks.
Yes, I know. I know. Anytime I can talk about climbing or go climbing, yeah, it's a good thing. Yeah. So, thank you guys.
Thanks a million, Brandon.
Thank you so much.